Welcome, everyone, to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley, a national news and talk program dedicated to military veterans issues. And now, your hosts, David Corey and Richard Hurley.
Good evening. Welcome to the Veterans News Hour for November the 11th, 2019. This is David Corey along with my co-host, Richard Hurley. Thank you for joining us this evening. Today, as you know, is Veterans Day. So I would like to begin by saluting all our veterans and to offer my appreciation to veterans and to their families for the sacrifices they made in serving our nation. Now over to Richard Hurley. Hello, Richard.
Hey there, David, and I'd like to echo those thoughts and also salute our veterans and thank them for their service and their families as well. A lot of sacrifice goes into serving. And tonight we have a special guest, Lauren Price of the group called Veteran Warriors, who will discuss the issue of toxic contamination from open air burn pits issued by the military in Iraq and Afghanistan during those wars, and how so many veterans have been affected with cancer and various other illnesses. First, though, I'll remind everyone that this is a call-in show that welcomes your views, your comments, and questions, so you can call us at any time during the show. The number is very simple. It's 1-888-627-6008. Again, that number is 1-888-627-6008. So call us at any time during the show. Back to you, David.
Thank you, Richard. Let me introduce our special guest, Lauren Price. She's the founder of Veteran Warriors, a national veterans advocacy group, and she has led that organization since its creation 10 years ago in 2009. She has testified before Congress on veteran issues, and as far as her career training and experience, she graduated from Omega Institute in New Jersey with paralegal certification in 1987. She also has a bachelor's degree in criminal justice with a minor in psychology from St. Leo University. She has more than two decades of experience in the legal profession. Of particular significance to our discussion tonight on this show, she served in the United States Navy for a decade between January 2005 and January 2015, including serving for more than a year in Iraq as a convoy driver, as well as a public affairs officer in Baghdad. She also served as the Intel and Logistics Lead Petty Officer at the Defense Logistics Agency, United States Central Command. She co-founded the veterans group called Veteran Warriors with her husband, Jim Price, who is retired Navy Senior Chief. Military service is a proud tradition in her family, with four of her five sons having served in the military as well. She's our guest tonight on the Veterans News Hour to talk about the issue of toxic contamination caused by the military's use of open-air burn pits and the effect on many veterans of the Iraq and Afghanistan wars. So let's welcome Lauren Price to the Veterans News Hour. How are things going, Lauren?
Just fine, thank you. Happy Veterans Day to everyone.
Thanks for joining us. We have lots to talk about, but for the benefit of our listeners who may not have heard your interviews on some of our prior shows, why don't we start with you telling us about your experience serving in the Navy, including more than a year in Iraq. What was that like?
Well, as you noted, I served 10 years in the Navy. I was probably one of the few sailors that never served on a ship. All my commands were shore commands. Right smack in the middle of it was a tour. I volunteered to go to Iraq, and I got assigned as a convoy driver. I was the lead convoy driver, meaning I was in charge of the convoy team, and that meant 25 to 30 different individuals were under my direction. And we had 350-plus missions outside the wire in a 13-month period during Iraq, what was technically as known as the worst of the Iraq War, which was all of 07 and early 08.
I see. Yeah, and 07, if I recall, was the year of the controversial surge of troops. Things had been going really bad for several years since the invasion of 03, and 07 was a year where they really sent in a lot more troops, as I understand it. What was your experience, Lauren, with the open burn pits?
There were My convoy team, we travel to just about every COP, which COP is a combat outpost, and FOB, which is a forward operating base, to all of eastern Iraq. The whole eastern third of Iraq, we were civil affairs, so we split our ownership of Iraq, of who we covered, with another brigade, and we went everywhere. Our colonel actually hated to fly and was a media hound, so we drove everywhere, and that meant was every place we went, though, that is the only method of disposing of trash, not just by our, you know, allied forces, but also by the host nation, that we've, their infrastructure in the nation had been completely destroyed long prior to us getting there. They had no water treatment, no waste disposal, no nothing. So they burn everything. So when we got there, that's what we decided to do, too. We're burning all our garbage.
Wow. Any idea of a rough number of how many of these open burn pits were used in Iraq?
The last count I saw, actually, from one of the special investigators was 154 in Iraq and 157 in Afghanistan. But that is not isolated, by the way, to those two nations. We also had locations in Syria and Djibouti. The fact is that there were a lot of places like these combat outposts where we'd have a grand total of, you know, six American guys there. And it's not even on anybody's radar that they lived there for 6 months, and the only way to dispose of trash was to burn it. So those numbers are very conservative, and that's even based on DOD records that we have.
I see. What can you describe for us what the largest of those burn pits were like, and, you know, where they were located and how large they were, and really what the environment was around them?
Well, imagine driving into New York City, and all of Times Square has been turned into a gaping hole, and every single thing you can touch, hold, breathe, eat, use is thrown into that pit. And then, just for added fun, we're going to light it on fire with jet fuel and keep it going around the clock to make sure that everything burns, because we don't want anything to get into, and I'm air quoting here, enemy hands, although no enemies to get near it. The two biggest ones were known at Balad and the base I was stationed at, which was Camp Liberty, part of the Victory Base Complex. And those were, Balad was 40 football fields, and
wow.
Victory was about the same. So 40 NFL-sized football fields, gaping holes in the earth, and everything from batteries, body parts, uniforms that are coated in permethrin, by the way, plastic water bottles, which is PCBs, styrofoam, PCEs. Then we have my personal two favorites. Any conceivable nut, bolt, screw, part, anything off of a military equipment. They're painted with what's called CARC paint, C-A-R-C paint. That is an acronym for a corrosive-resistant paint that was developed solely for the military. And everything is painted with it. And the Army discovered in the first Gulf War that that paint becomes highly super carcinogenic when burned. So they have this huge manual that's like 35 pages long about not burning it, about do not ignite it, about if you have to weld a piece of equipment, what the precautions you have to take. And yet, I personally took a what's called a 998, like a little pickup of a Humvee, and loaded that up with broken parts off of vehicles, and then go dump it in the burn pit, where they're going to, again, ignite it with JP-8 and keep it burning until it's melted.
Wow.
So we're releasing all of that stuff right into the air. And what probably about 95% of the people I deal with every day don't understand. You didn't have to live next door to this thing. I lived a quarter of a mile from my chew, my little hut, was a quarter of a mile away. But you did not have to live that close or even closer. If you lived within a five-mile radius of this thing, you were being exposed because it becomes airborne. And then what happens with any particulate matter that is in our air, and if anyone doesn't understand that, go watch a video of Mount St. Helens when it exploded. The stuff falls down to the ground, and then it lands in the soil, and it gets into the soil, and it gets into the water. So every conceivable way that you could possibly get contaminated by it, you have been contaminated.
Wow. And Lauren, what kinds of illnesses and cancers have now been afflicting veterans that serve there?
We have, right now, I actually checked in with some researchers that we're working with, an organization called Hunter 7. They do peer research on this stuff. There's over 150 different types of cancers that we've identified. There are over 20 different lung diseases. The one I contracted is technically terminal, meaning that they can't cure it and they can't even remediate it. There's no treatment per se. All they can do is treat the symptoms, and it will shorten your lifespan exponentially.
Wow.
There are gastrointestinal problems. There are fertility issues that we're identifying. A huge number of, I actually just had this conversation last night, huge number of the lymphatic system, which governs an enormous amount of stuff going on in your body, that the lymphatic systems are being affected, male, female, young, older, and all kinds of horrific stuff coming out of that. And what I want any listener to know, Agent Orange, which is based on the dioxin exposures from Vietnam era, it took over 30 years for most of those veterans to start presenting with symptoms of the diseases they contracted. Most of the veterans I know that have served in Iraq or Afghanistan or Djibouti are sick within 12 months to 36 months from contracting. We're getting
wow.
sick way faster. We're dying way faster. And to this moment, no one has an answer, and all we're being told is there's no causal link.
Wow. Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you next. If you could describe for us what the Department of Defense and the Department of Veteran Affairs, what their reactions have been over the years as far as, the causal link between those chemicals and the disabled veterans.
Well, I'm going to do on the Wayback Machine here. In 2009, while I was at Defense Logistics Agency, one of my last tasks for the last several months I was there was to handle the RFIs, RFQs, and the actual purchases of the incinerators that went over in 2009 after the first round of media attention. Those incinerators got left sitting on pallets and were not used. The American taxpayer spent billions on those incinerators to help prevent us from getting sick. That was in 2009. The Army amended its environmental protocols and regulations for combat locations in 2009 to include very specific EPA regulations governing like what the acceptable levels of exposure were of all these different things that they'd already found. Fast forward 10 years later. In May of this year, the Department of Defense testified in front of a Senate committee hearing and provided a written testimony that basically the first page, and I apologize to your sensitive readers, but it was a giant middle finger because they said, our host nation open air burn their trash, therefore we will.
Wow.
And we're talking third world, war-torn countries that don't have indoor plumbing, it's okay that we're going to be like them instead of setting the example and leading from the front.
Wow.
The very next day, the Army issued a request for sources to find manufacturers who could build a incinerator that has been tested and proved amazingly expeditious and effective in burning and incinerating like 95% of everything we have downrange for a fraction of the cost of what we faced 10 years ago. So literally out of the same mouth, they're saying, we don't care what you guys want. We're going to go ahead and do this. And they say in that Senate testimony that it's not cost effective to have incinerators. It's more cost effective, apparently, to let people die. Because the soldiers that are coming home, the ones we send over, the 18 to 25-year-olds, are coming home with T-cell leukemia, brain cancer, pancreatic cancer, and they're dead in 3 years. That's top. So it's okay and cost-effective to do that instead of taking the Army's own R&D and getting incinerators in there that during mass production are looking at a cost of about $500,000 a piece, which is peanuts, pennies, compared to 10 years ago.
All right. Lauren, what can you tell us about, you know, the research done over decades by U.S. government agencies like the Environmental Protection Agency, Occupational Safety and Health Administration, OSHA, the CDC, World Health Organization, others, National Institute of Health, and others where there have been researchers.
They were saying in that Senate testimony. They said it there. They said it again 2 days ago. The Department of Veterans Affairs said it. They have said this consistently for 10 years, we cannot find a causal link between the exposure to these chemicals and the diseases these people are presenting with. And I'm going to challenge your readers, or your listeners, excuse me, to go out and just look up the most basic thing. We all know what the smell of burning tires smells like. That smell is a gas called butadiene. And by the way, tires is one of the most prevalent things in every single burn pit.
Wow.
Butadiene, if you were in the same room with it, you're dead in 30 minutes. If you're in the same building, you're dead in 4 hours. If you're in the vicinity of it and contract it through your skin, by breathing or swallowing it, you are going to, 100% surety, you are going to contract cancer. And you will die from that. Butadiene is one of those deadly gases known to man, and every single jurisdiction in this nation has been banned from open-air burning tires by the Department of Environmental Protection, by OSHA, by WHO, which is the World Health Organization, by the National Institute of Science. And they have decades of research that have gone into helping our nation create comprehensive environmental laws that keep us all from dying. You can't pump gas that doesn't have that little nozzle thing on it that captures the fume, because even gas fumes are dangerous. But the Department of Defense and the Department of Veterans Affairs still to this very second will stand there and say, there is no research available. Yet, the best example I can give you of how badly they are disavowing thousands of man hours of clinical research. There is a disease called chloracne. The one and only cause for chloracne is dioxin exposure, which was the key ingredient in Agent Orange.
Right.
If you go to the VA's website and you type in the search box, Clorax, C-H-L-O-R-A-C-N-E, you're going to find a whole page all about chloracne and how they know that the only thing that causes it is dioxin exposure. And it says at the end of that page that if you contracted chloracne from service in Vietnam, it is considered what's called a presumptive disease. They will automatically grant you benefit because you have that. So they assume that you were just exposed to dioxin because you have this disease. Except if you present with chloracne and you didn't serve in Vietnam, you are not given a presumptive for it. And I have that disease. I have never been near dioxin in my entire life until I went to Iraq. And yet, because I served in Iraq and not Vietnam, the VA doesn't want to acknowledge it and claims there's no causal link. Their own information belies their statement.
Right. So what should veterans do now? A veteran that, I know you're going to tell us about the burn registry. Let's talk about that for a minute. The VA set up this burn pits registry. What's that about?
Several years ago, there were some other families, like myself and my husband, veterans who've gotten sick from exposures, and we all got together and we lobbied to have this registry created. The purpose behind having them build this was so that providers, medical providers, and rating examiners within the VA system would have access to our records. It would show up, and they would be able to see all the places we served and what we were exposed to based on our own self-reported information. When they beta tested it, I was one of the beta testers. And there were over 200 questions. They wanted to know whether I licked lead paint when I was a kid. They wanted to know what my mother smoked. An enormous amount of information that had nothing to do with my service. And we all gave them that feedback. They went ahead and put it live, exactly the way it sat. Into the law, we made sure that this one little thing was there, that the National Academy of Science, Engineering, and Medicine was to, at the one-year mark of that thing being live, they were to evaluate the efficacy of that registry. And they spent over a year doing so. Their report came out in February of 17. Scathing is being polite. The last, I don't know, it's like five pages. The summary is the best place for people to start. I'm happy to email it to anyone. Because the first thing it says is that basically it's junk. It's so poorly built that researchers cannot derive anything other than the most basic data, our names and dates of birth, that kind of thing they can get out of it. But where we served, what we're supposed to, nope. Rating examiners cannot even access it. Medical providers only get to see a little checkbox. They cannot access it. And even if they could, the National Academy found that the data was so badly garbled because the questions were so bad that it was effectively useless. There was a three-page list of recommendations that were given to the secretary to repair the registry, to make it effective, to make it useful, so that those who, of my friends and compatriots and peers who have died, wouldn't have died in vain. So instead, back in June, my number two, she's our national appeals director, and I, we were finally graced with a meeting with the secretary's office. I asked Jason Beardsley to his face, he is the VSO liaison to the secretary, are you going to fix the registry according to what the recommendation said? No, we're not.
Wow.
Is it not like on the table or is it not in the budget? No, we have no intention of doing anything with that right now. Like, right now, like, not this year, not this month, not now at all. It's not even being discussed. In February, it will be 3 years since that report came out. There have been over 50,000 people who have registered on that since then. And the icing on the cake is the DOD, who loves to stand around and tell everybody that there's no causal link, is now putting on people's active duty soldiers, sailors, airmen, and Marines on their pay statement that if you feel like you've been exposed to something toxic, you need to go to the VA burn pit registry and register. Here's the real kicker. DOD doesn't bother to tell anybody that if you're active duty, you can't register on there.
Wow.
So the whole thing is a giant goat rope, and everybody's sitting back going, well, they'll all be dead soon enough, so we don't have to worry about it.
So the fellow you spoke to at the VA secretary's office, who basically said the VA is not going to do anything to repair the burn pit registry problems, did he offer any reason or any justification for that?
Well, he said they were focused on getting everything ready for Mission Act, but, you know, this all happened long before Mission Act. And I will tell you that there's a member of my organization who was a senior executive with Hewlett Packard, and he's a computer geek. And he assessed the registry and the recommendations made by the National Academy. And his off-the-cuff comment was basically the help desk guys that they hired that are right out of college and have no experience, it would take those guys a day to fix the registry.
Wow.
A day. If we outsourced it to a reputable organization that actually knows where to find their rear end with both hands. But the VA has no intention of doing that. Do you know why? Because they have no intention. We're 10 years into this now. They have no intention of actually doing what's right. Taking care of veterans, caring for those who have borne the battle. Because when I, today, spent 2 hours on the phone with a client who is an OEF veteran, who has lung nodules and seizures, who can't get his VA neurologist to sign a piece of paper so that he can get state-funded disability because he can't work because of the seizures he now has.
Lauren, let me ask you this. Let me ask you this question, Lauren. You know, the VA claims that the current research, whatever that is, doesn't show enough of this causal link, but the VA claims that it's actually doing studies. I know you've mentioned the burn pit registry problems, massive problems with the validity of that registry, but what is your thought on the VA's alleged efforts to continue to study the issue of the causal connection between the burn pits and the cancers and other illnesses? What do you think of that research?
Well, first and foremost, their research is unfortunately very skewed. They're not accepting any, let's start off with, why are they having to research whether or not if I breathe gasoline, I'm going to die? Because they could contact EPA or OSHA or WHO, or, you know, they could scoop up, you know, miles high of paperwork of studies and research to prove this. But now they're going to have to prove this. Well, they're not studying those of us who are sick. They're studying the people that are still serving and just coming home. Instead of, and I'm two years ago, they sat in a meeting at a roundtable discussion with us, and their environmental doctor told us that they were setting up a longitudinal study on veterans to track where they came from, like from boot cradle to grave kind of thing, boot camp all the way to you getting out. And we told them to their faces that day, that has nothing to do with everybody that's home already sick and dying. That's great that you're going to do that from now on. but it has zero impact on you denying benefits to hundreds of thousands of veterans. And Dr. Emerson said, well, I have no control over that. Because the Research Advisory Committee, which is was set up to discuss, to research this stuff 10 years ago, is full of hand-picked VA providers and VA researchers. They're not bringing in anyone from the National Academy. They're not bringing in anyone from Duke or Brown or, you know, Raleigh-Durham. They're not bringing in the actual experts. There's three providers in this country that have cared for thousands of us who have this lung disease, and not one of them has been invited. In fact, they've all been essentially blackballed from dealing with VA or treating us through VA channel because they don't toe the line.
Were those the doctors that were in the Burn Pit documentary?
Yeah.
Were those the same doctors?
Yeah, Dr. Robert Miller at Vanderbilt, he is actually he's my doctor and several of my friends' doctors. There's Dr. Cecile Rose at the Jewish National and Dr. Anthony Zima at Stony Brook Medical Center in New York. Those are the three doctors that have consistently and constantly taken care of us and researched this issue, not just about the lung diseases, but about these toxic exposures. Dr. Zima, in particular, has been focused on the heavy metals and the particulate matter that we've been exposed to that would account for some of these other rare things that are happening, like degenerative brain disease. That's not normal for someone who's under the age of 80, and it's actually become quite common amongst those of us who served, especially 05 to 09. And Dr. Zima's been studying that stuff.
I recall from watching the Burn Pit documentary, which is called Delay, Deny, Hope You Die, How America Poisoned Its Soldiers, by the way. The film director and producer is Greg Lovett. But, Lauren, when I watched that film, the doctor from Vanderbilt, as I recall, he described how, you know, he had a waiting room full of young veterans, young active duty troops, you know, that are in their 20s, people that obviously were very healthy when they went over to Iraq, but when they came back, they're failing their fitness test. They've got all sorts of breathing problems that the basic tests weren't productive in providing a diagnosis, but that other tests that normally weren't being done by the military and the VA were useful. What can you share with us about that?
Well, I will tell you this. I was sick. I got sick while I was still over there in Iraq. I didn't know that's what it was. I thought it basically was the Iraq crud that just wouldn't let go. By the time I got home and started going through that medical process of being boarded, I was sent to a civilian doctor because the military didn't have specialists on the base at CENTCOM. My civilian doctor, he came to me with the test results that we had after my biopsy, and he said he had no idea what I had. He didn't know what was wrong. What he did know is he had 75 other active duty soldiers that were all coming in with the same thing. We all had the same thing.
Wow.
Dr. Miller has told me to my face that the biggest problem that we're having is that VA will not, absolutely will not, I've heard of literally one case in 10 years now where they have authorized a lung biopsy. A lung biopsy of the lower lungs is the only conclusive way to determine if someone has constrictive bronchiolitis. You can't see it on chest x-rays, pulmonary function tests, times early cases before you get real sick, you can actually complete those pulmonary function tests. Eventually you get to a point where you lose pulmonary function, but you're still not, they don't see anything. And they've been told, because the kicker of this is Dr. Miller was hired by the VA to study the soldiers who were exposed to the Mosul sulfur fire. there was a company of army that was exposed to a sulfur fire mine in Mosul, Iraq. And it all to the man got sick. So the VA hired Dr. Miller to study them. And his results were almost to the man that every single one of them had CV, which is syncytial bronchiolitis. And he did an entire paper on this and presented it to VA. And VA paid him and said, thank you for your time. And guess what? He is essentially blackballed. No one can get VA to pay as through community care, through, you know, never mind, no Mission Act, but fee basis, to get to see Dr. Miller or Dr. Rose or Dr. Zima. And what it smacks of is that, you know, VA and DOD don't want to talk about it. They refuse to even discuss. They will not even answer the question, well, why aren't you using EPA regulations and their research? Why aren't you using WHO and OSHA's? They won't even answer the question. But then we come down to when the soldiers, sailors, airmen, and Marine get sick, why will you not send them to these specialists?
Right.
Once again,
at the very least. Yeah, at the very least. So, Lauren, what is Congress doing? But I guess the best way to ask that question would be, why are they not doing more in Congress to address the problems that you've described?
Well, we have a twofold problem. Unfortunately, we have a divided House right now, and that creates, this is to in our world, in Veteran Warriors' world, we don't discuss politics. We have to recognize they exist, and that means that things like getting legislation through is more difficult when we have a divided House like we do right now. Our problem is that despite the fact that we have a lot of veterans now serving, especially very vocal veterans like Congressman Mass, Congressman, one of my issues is loss of memory, and we have So we have a bunch of them. Brain function. We have all these veterans, and they're very vocal, but the issue is that we have what we are calling, we've coined the term palliative, and for those who don't know what that means, it palliative means we care for your symptoms, we make you feel better. It's typically associated with hospice care. We can't cure what's wrong with you. You're still going to die from this, but we're going to make you as comfortable as possible. When you have a bill that says, we're going to open the burn pit registry to allow deceased veterans to be placed on the registry. That is actually a bill that's in Congress right now. My first thought when I read that was, how about a bill to make VA fix the registry first? Because there's nothing in the law or in the build of the registry that says we can't put the deceased veteran on there. The problem is that the registry is so broken, we can't do it. So instead of a bill to make them fix it, we have a palliative bill to make people feel better, to get their deceased veteran on that registry, that will end up being a black hole in cyberspace. It's useless information. We have another bill that, and most people have asked me, why don't I support this bill? This bill would make constrictive bronchiolitis a presumptive illness with the Department of Veterans Affairs, which by virtue of their association and the memorandums of understanding in place, it would also be with the Department of Defense. I have this disease. I absolutely believe it should be a presumptive disease. It is with Social Security and has been since 2012. However, lung issues are actually like the lower percentage of the diseases that people are contracting. I'm not going to kick all my brothers and sisters to the curb that have bizarre, weird, four multiple kinds of cancers and dying just so I can get this one bill through. How about we take the chemicals that we know from DOD records that have been found there. And we asked the National Academy of Science to give us the list of diseases associated with those exposure to those chemicals. And then that's the presumptive list. And I've been told by no less than 10 different VSOs, well, that's going to be too expensive. Well, if you send them, you got to amend them.
Right. Yeah, that's it. All comes down to money. You know, we have presumptive lists, and for the benefit of all our listeners, presumptive list is basically means that if you develop a particular illness or cancer, it's on this list, and you served in the covered area, that the VA will presume, without requiring you to produce any further evidence, like medical evidence, will presume that that disease or illness was caused by your military service. They have presumptive lists for Agent Orange, for Vietnam. They have a presumptive list now for certain illnesses from the contaminated drinking water at Camp Lejeune, North Carolina. So the idea is there ought to be, you know, we're 10 years into this, even just going back to 09, where this issue has been discussed. Why hasn't Congress come up with a presumptive list that does more than constrictive bronchiolitis, as you said, Lauren, that covers, you know, a reasonable list of the cancers and other illnesses? It's a tragedy that Congress is not doing anything. I understand your point about Congress being divided, and it kind of brings everything to a standstill, but it's been my observation that they kind of, in general, I know there's a lot of exceptions you can point to, but in general, veteran issues tend to be one that, if anything can be bipartisan, usually the support for the veterans is. I know there's a lot of exceptions to that, and we can certainly discuss specific bills, but it's a real shame that... Go ahead.
Well, what I'm going to say is this, and what I've seen, and we've had... Veteran Warriors is part of a very large task force that is discussing and ruminating over toxic exposures. And because we're trying to push towards the term of toxic exposure, because what is coming to light right now is also PFAS, which is a chemical that's found in, typically people know it as what's found in firefighting foam. It's also found in an enormous amount of other things. So it's not restricted to, you know, somebody who worked around firefighting equipment. It's also, if you worked in the chow hall and you were exposed to the chemicals that sanitized the dishes, it's in there. So it's everywhere. My contention is that, and you brought up a great point there, David, with, you know, Camp Lejeune water contamination. Those of us in this battle space of working in advocacy, that the giving those people the medical care that they need, that they deserve, for that contamination went through with light speed. Because In 2 years, from the day it hit the media until they were granted medical care, was 2 years. Now, here's what's going to aggravate a lot of people. The exact same document that identified the Camp Lejeune water contamination is called the VA's environmental training letter. Happy to email anyone if they want it. I have it. That email, or that letter, was distributed as a policy letter by a former policy director. He's an attorney. His name's Kerry Baker. He now is in private practice doing the VA for burn pit people. He wrote that, and the first 8 pages of that policy letter, it's 26 pages long, discuss the burn pits in Iraq, Afghanistan, and Djibouti. It isn't until you have to wade through that, and it even includes the chemicals that have been found, an instruction to the VA that all we have to say is we serve there and we are sick. Essentially, a de facto presumptive. You have to wade through all of that just to get to the Camp Lejeune stuff. And even then, when they discussed and made medical available for everyone contaminated at Camp Lejeune, they conveniently left out Asugi, Japan. The base in Asugi, Japan has been there even longer and has higher contamination rates and is contained in that same letter. So,
yep. And there's other bases as well. There's a website, civilianexposure.org, which documents a lot of the contamination at stateside, but other overseas bases from all sorts of things. And
the DoD is the biggest contaminator worldwide. They have the most. Now, to bind this all up into a nice little package for everyone, it's not just veterans who are sick from this. I need everyone to be really clear on that. We have a veteran. His wife is actually on our staff. This veteran has, he's under 30, and he has brain lesions and lung condition and seizures and all kinds of other cool stuff that he got from serving over in the Middle East. Their daughter, who is 7 years old, was born, conceived and born after he served over there. Their daughter was born with and now has grown into at 7 years old. It's such a rare brain cancer that like five different geneticists can't even identify where this came from.
Wow.
I want to tell you how many kids I know, children born of OIF and OEF veterans that are come back profoundly mentally retarded, profoundly on the deep end of the autism spectrum, nonverbal, all that good stuff, and all these other health issues that our children are getting, just like the same pathology of dioxin where it was passed down to the children. But we had younger people going, and they're getting sick sooner, so they're passing it down to their kids sooner. And for anybody who thinks that they're going to be left out of this little game that we're playing with the Department of Defense, if you live inside the United States, there are 51 locations where Department of Defense is open-air burning known contaminants, known toxins, open-air burning. There's three right here in Florida.
Wow.
If you're in Tennessee, there's Holton, Tennessee, where they are killing people. They got the whole town has cancer. Inside the U.S., the DOD is open-air burning, and it's the big, ugly secret nobody's talking about. Because if it's just the veterans and it's just overseas, well, if we don't go to war, then we're not going to get sick.
Right.
They're
ignoring the stateside things and the fact that it not only affects veterans, but it affects the civilian communities. It affects the children. It's a big issue. And, Lauren, I applaud you and your organization for doing all you're doing to try to get Congress to act on this. Now, we've got a few minutes left on our show. Lauren, if you could tell us what you would recommend for Congress now and also what our listeners can do as far as contacting their representative in the House of Representatives and their two U.S. senators. What would you recommend to them?
First and foremost is Bill H.R. 4086. If you really want to support the troops and you want to support your veterans, demand that your representatives support 4086. Get on and co-sign for it. We take away the power from the VA to decide what's presumptive. We have scientists who will actually make that decision. And that will help every single person who has served in the Middle East, bar none. If they get sick, they're going to be taken care of. Secondly, but equally important, ask them to hold the DOD accountable, that we have to stop them. They are no different than any other corporation or agency. They don't have the right to decide that they're going to contaminate our air, our water, inside the U.S. or anywhere out in the world. We need to hold them accountable, and you have to ask your congressmen and women and your senators to demand that now.
That's great advice, Lauren. I appreciate your insights and all your organization is doing. Before we wrap things up, I want to give Rick Hurley an opportunity. Rick, anything you'd like to add questions for Lauren?
No, I don't have any questions. I just want to, Lauren, I want to applaud you for everything you're doing for our veterans. You know, it's a day, you know, today's Veterans Day, and if I like your comment, if you really want to support your veterans, you know, that's the kind of stuff that I think about all the time. And I look at a day like today when we're putting on all these parades and we're doing all these great things and well-deserved things for sure. But, you know, there's some huge, huge issues out there that need to get resolved. And you're at the center of a lot of it. And I applaud what you're doing. Keep it up.
And Lauren, well, if I could ask you to, if you could share with our listeners your website and how our listeners and veterans and their families can support your group.
They can find us. We're real easy. It's veteran-warriors.org. And in there are several links to either donate, or we don't ask for something for nothing. We have T-shirts, sweatshirts, all kinds of little gigas you can buy and support our efforts. We've applied for nonprofit status. We're waiting to hear from the Internal Revenue. But honestly, please contact your senators, your congressmen and women. Ask them to force DOD to stop burning inside the U.S. and outside, and ask them to support 4086, because that will 100% take care of all of our veterans who have served overseas, because it's not just this war or the last one. It's all the ones coming. We get this law in place, we won't do this again like Vietnam did.
Right. Well, Lauren, thank you so much for all the great work you're doing for veterans and their families, and thank you for being on our show tonight. We'd like to invite you back anytime in the future that's convenient for your schedule, so you can keep our listeners updated on these important issues. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you very much for having us. I really appreciate it. Everyone at Veteran Warriors is grateful for giving us the time to let you know what's going on, especially stuff that's going on behind the scenes. And there's some bigger stuff coming down the pike, so I will be in touch about coming back.
Very good. We hope you will. Thanks again, Lauren.
Thanks again, Lauren. Have a good night.
You too, gentlemen. Thank you.
Thank you. Now, we've got about 3 minutes left.
Yeah, let me close this out here. We're going to talk about the coaching and the care program. It helps veterans having difficulty transitioning to home life. Returning home can be a tough adjustment, and loved ones can help. Coaching and the care offers free coaching to help you help your veteran. Call the program at toll-free 1-888-823-7458. It's open Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Again, the VA's coaching and the care number is 1-888-823-7458. In addition, I'd like to once again remind listeners that if you know a veteran who is suicidal or in a crisis of any kind, the U.S. Department of Veteran Affairs also has a Veterans Crisis Line. To help, call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. Many veterans have committed suicide because they did not get the help they needed. Help them get the care they need to cope with their problems. Once again, that number is at the Veterans Crisis Line, 1-800-273-8255, and press 1. Back to you, David.
Thank you, Rick. Well, it's time for us to go for this evening. I'd like to thank all of you for listening to the Veterans News Hour here on BBS Radio Station 1. We'd like to thank our show sponsors, Joyce and Joe Chivaroli, as well as Corey and Hurley Law Group. We'd like to thank our show engineer and producer for tonight's show at BBS Radio, Mr. Don Newsom. And we hope all of you listeners will tune in next week, same time, same station. That's 7 p.m. Eastern, 6 Central, 5 p.m. Mountain, and 4 p.m. Pacific Time here on BBSRadio.com, Station 1, for another edition of the Veterans News Hour. Thanks again to all our veterans and their families for their service and sacrifices for our country here on Veterans Day. We hope you'll tune in next week. Until then, we hope you have a great week.
Thank you for listening to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley. We hope you found this week's program very informative. Be sure to invite your friends and all the veterans you know to tune in next week, when we'll have another great show on veterans issues. Meanwhile, You can listen to our other recorded episodes on the Veterans News Hour webpage on VBSRadio.com. Thanks again for listening to the Veterans News Hour.